headlines this hour. A panel of US economists warn of a long-term unemployment crisis. Oil prices jump as strikers block tankers in France's main oil port. And Hungary declares a state of emergency following toxic floods.
And those were the top stories of 2300 hours GMT, 2:30 a.m., where we are in Tehran with Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. A panel of economists have predicted several more years of pain for Americans.
They have warned that unemployment will remain high for beyond 2014. The panel includes Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman, Harvard's Martin Feldstein, and Goldman Sachs chief economist Jan Hatzius. They believe that policymakers have failed to adequately stimulate the economy. The economists have also suggested that the Federal Reserve Board could do more by buying government debt or other investments. But the panel has predicted that the Fed won't have the will to take risks and buy enough treasuries to make much of an impact. Meanwhile, Feldstein has predicted that home prices could fall even further. He says prices will slump as more homeowners give banks the keys to their houses, increasing the supply of available ones. Earlier, we talked about the dire state of the U.S. economy with financial journalist Max Keiser. He blamed the Federal Reserve for keeping interest rates artificially low.
In order to stimulate jobs, you would need to stimulate capital. And in order to increase the capital, you would need to raise interest rates. But the Federal Reserve Board is saying that they will not raise interest rates. So you have to ask yourself why. And the answer is that by keeping interest rates artificially low, as they do now, they allow for speculators on Wall Street to borrow money at virtually no cost. And what happens is whenever these speculators make a mistake, they make a huge bet on a currency, for example, and if that bet goes bad, then they convince the government to impose austerity measures on the population to pay off those bad debts. And we've seen this cycle repeat now every 6 months, and it's getting worse. It's been growing for the past few years.
College fees in the United States are getting a lot more expensive. Press TV's Colin Campbell tells us how parents are spending their money and how students are living on campuses.
Sidney Revell is a mechanical engineer at Howard University in Washington, D.C. To manage the rising costs of college tuition, she works as a campus information officer.
I like staying challenged, so keeps me busy, definitely.
And these days, students are getting busier as their parents make more financial sacrifices. American families are cutting back on money that they would typically spend on their children's education as the stifled economy puts pressure on household finances. More parents are reevaluating how they allocate their income, and more students are going to work while they go to class. A recent Gallup poll found that 60% of parents who have children under 18 say they are saving for their children's college educations. On average, parents were on track to save more than $48,000. About 15% of families are using a college savings plan, compared with 11% a year ago and 9% 2 years ago.
It's pretty hard right now for me, but loans help, so. Okay. I'm getting there.
Well, probably panic is the most pervasive thought.
Lee Dingerson is an education reform advocate and a mother of two daughters, one of whom is going to college next year. She has made adjustments to her budget to accommodate the rising cost of managing a household.
I think we're probably going to pay in 1 year what my parents were paying over four for college. So I think it's a huge difference, and my sense is that, you know, it's getting harder and harder for all families to make ends meet and send someone to school, and financial aid's getting tougher and tougher to get.
But despite the struggle, college for her daughter is a top priority, as with many other families with college-bound children, as studies also show.
And we'll try to make it work, but, you know, to be honest, we don't know how we're going to make it work.
On the tail of a recession, it doesn't matter what the field of study is. Parents and students are receiving a lesson in applied economics. For Press TV, Colin Campbell, Washington.
More protests across Europe. Thousands of angry Europeans once again take to the streets to protest desperate economic policy reforms by their governments. Strikers at France's top oil port have blocked more tankers. They began obstructing large oil tankers back on Monday. Demonstrators have so far blocked 30 vessels. Port and refinery unions may join forces to intensify strikes soon. In the capital, Paris, thousands of angry workers took to the streets to protest government pension reform. The debate has begun in the Senate to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. French President Nicolas Sarkozy has called the bill his top priority for the rest of his term. Also in Romania, thousands of teachers have taken to the streets to protest austerity measures recently imposed by their government. The teachers are demanding the government revoke wage cuts and abandon plans for more layoffs. In the public sector, Romania is already in a financial mess. It received a 20 billion euro loan from the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, back in 2009. In return, Bucharest promised to fire 70,000 civil workers and cut most of its public spending. To give us a better understanding of the situation, I'm going to bring in Paul Sheldon Foote. He is a professor with California State University from Irvine. Many thanks, Professor Foote, for joining our program. Austerity protests, as you know, are spreading across Europe. Do you expect European leaders to finally give in to the pressure?
They will have to make some adjustments. The workers are correct in the sense that they're being cheated. When you originally convince workers to work 10, 20, 30, 40 years at low salaries and promise them high pensions, for example, as part of the package, and then later on try to adjust the package downward, you're stealing from the workers. The political leaders won't be able to get away with that for very long. Part of it's the fault, though, of the workers who voted these same political leaders in on the promises of these huge government programs and pensions and everything else, and for tolerating dishonest accounting and auditing. So the methods they're using are not the best ways to go, but they certainly have a good case.
Professor Foote, are austerity measures basically a good idea, or is there a better alternative for Europe, do you think?
Well, austerity measures are certainly needed. The only problem is that the average person is saying, why do we have to carry the whole price? The bankers have gone scot-free. The investment bankers of the world have gone scot-free. They're not in jail. They're getting even bigger bonuses. Why do we pay the entire price? I'm sure if you were to tell the workers, hey, you'll pay a little bit of it, but we're going to make the others pay a huge portion out of the financial institutions and in the political front, it'd be a different story. But instead, all they see is the middle class shrinking away, and they're losing, and the small group of the elite are winning everything. So they're not going to tolerate that.
Many thanks. Paul Sheldon Foote, professor at California State University from Irvine. Now to oil prices. They have hit a five-month peak near $83 a barrel.
Well, indeed, the hike is driven by the slumping dollar and the port strike in France. On Tuesday, the dollar hit its lowest level against the euro since February. This comes as speculation grows on an impending intervention by the U.S. Federal Reserve to boost the ailing American economy. The price rise was also sustained by the Bank of Japan's surprise announcement of a zero interest rate policy. It also announced further monetary easing measures in a bid to combat the harmful strength of the yen and beat persistent deflation. A weaker dollar can raise oil prices because it makes dollar-denominated crude cheaper for buyers using other currencies. Well, Hungary has declared a state of emergency after toxic red sludge flooded seven villages southwest of the capital Budapest.
At least four people have been killed and 120 others injured, some of them seriously. Officials fear the death toll could rise there. The chemical accident is the worst ever in the country. At least six people are missing after the walls of a reservoir of residue at an aluminum plant broke. The sludge is seeped into homes, forcing people to flee. In a couple of days, the sludge is expected to reach the Danube, Europe's second longest river. Environmental group Greenpeace has blamed plant managers. It says satellite imagery taken a day before the disaster shows cracks in the reservoir, and conservation group WWF has expressed concern about the accident's long-term impact on the environment.
Bosnia-Herzegovina's constitution is the most complicated one in Europe. The country is home to three ethnic groups, or so-called constituent peoples, a term unique for the Balkan country. Press TV's correspondent Natalia Sedleska has this report.
Elections in Bosnia were once again held under the outdated 1995 constitution, which appeared as a result of the Dayton Peace Agreement signed at the end of the Bosnian War. This constitution is aimed at observing the rights of all three ethnic groups in the country, the Bosnian Muslims, Croats and Serbs. Now the presidium is made up of the president from each community.
Some citizens of this country are not allowed to run for some of the political offices. They're excluded from the process. And so the court has said very clearly that that must be changed.
The European Court of Human Rights declared the constitution of Bosnia discriminatory, saying it was based on ethnic division. However, the politicians are in no hurry to share power. On the contrary, the constitution only pushes to foment separatism, which is displayed in the current election campaign that took on a wave of nationalist rhetoric.
There is no consensus between political parties. Political parties make manipulation by ethnic fears, by post-war trauma. Militant rhetorics makes fear. Fear make mobilization. Mobilization make high percent of election voting. It's simple mathematics.
However, the Bosnian constitution is unique in another respect, its incredible complexity. The country is divided into a republic and a federation. The federation is divided into 10 cantons. On Sunday, the population elected representatives of all three levels of government.
We have one of the most complicated election systems in the world, and we can notice that a lot of international observers is here, not only standard election observation mission from OSCE, ODIHR, from Council of Europe, from NATO. We have here a lot of delegations, state election commissions, who are our guests, who would like to see our complicated election system.
But the disjointed government and lack of consensus has led to a decline in the economy. Bosnia has a 43% unemployment rate. The country that lives off foreign credits spends half of its GDP on paying a bloated number of employees on the payroll of the government. Three presidents for the state presidium, one president of the Serb Republic, 200 ministers, 700 parliamentarians, in total 50,000 officials who find it hard to agree on anything rule the country. The constitution is not perfect and required changes, and this election has focused more attention on this need. Natalia Sedleska, Press TV, Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina.
2:44 a.m. in Tehran, and a reminder of this hour's top stories. A panel of U.S. economists warns of a long-term unemployment crisis. Oil prices jump as strikers block tankers in France's main oil port. And Hungary declares a state of emergency following toxic floods.